podcast family. Don't mean to brag. I really don't. Trust me. It's coming from a humble place. I'm not braggadocious. Well, I'm a little braggadocious, but this is not about bragging. In this episode, we're going to present an article that just got accepted in AJOG MFM. That's the pink journal, okay? The American Journal of OBGYN MFM. And this was accepted on April the 1st, 2024, all right? No, it's not an April Fool's joke, even though we are doing this still within the first week of April. This came out April the 1st, 2024. And this deals with a topic that we've covered many times in the past, all right? And when originally this was released, and I know we've got several episodes on this, I received a mixed bag of messages, all right? 90% of the messages were like, oh my goodness, this is working. Why had I not learned this before? The rule of 55 seems to be legit. It's working when we tailor our medication to the blood pressure finding based on whether they are hyperdynamic or not hyperdynamic based on their blood pressure reading. And that was like 90% of the messages received. I mean, this is working. It's great info. It makes sense. Thanks for the publications that back it up. So yeah, good info. And then maybe like 10% at max were like, I've never heard of this. This rule of 55 sounds like nonsense. I'm not doing that. Okay, like somehow it's going to offend me. Hey man, you do what you want to do. I'm just telling you that, again, not that labetalol is wrong or nifedipine is wrong. It's just that those are all acceptable options. But if you can prevent escalation of the medications, that obviously is best, right? Because it's all about being the most effective with a single therapy if we target it correctly. So rather than just memorizing, I give everybody labetalol or I give everybody Brocardia, the reason we have options is because every patient is different and we need to listen to them. And when I mean listen to them, I mean listen to what they're telling us by their blood pressure. Their blood pressure is telling you something is off with their physiology, whether they are hyperdynamic or non-hyperdynamic based on their blood pressure reading. Now, already if I've lost some of you, it's because you have not listened to that episode on the appropriate way to select medications for patients that have urgent hypertension, all right? So that's called either the hyperdynamic medication protocol or the non-hyperdynamic, in other words, the increased peripheral vascular resistance algorithm. And you got to go back and listen to that. I didn't come up with this. This has been around for a long time because Dr. Foley was one of the ones out of MFM who really helped hammer this, is that stop giving just labetalol to everybody or a Preseline to everybody because that's what you do. Those are good choices, but they may not be the best based on their initial blood pressure reading. That's called the rule of 55. Do y'all remember that? If you don't, you got to go back and listen to that episode. Lots of data that we covered regarding that. Very quickly, as a quick synopsis, just as a quick reminder, that if the delta, if the change between systolic and diastolic blood pressure is less than 55, in other words, a blood pressure of 160 over 110, right? That delta, that 160 over 110, 160 minus 110 is 50. So if it's less than 55, then that meant that it was an increase in peripheral vascular resistance. So you would give a peripheral vasodilator like a calcium channel blocker like Brocardia or methyldopa. Okay. But if the delta was greater than 55, like say it's 160 over 90, where that delta now is 70, then that means that they were hyperdynamic and you needed to give something to decrease cardiac output, targeting like the heart contractility, so you'd give labetalol, all right? Hyperdynamic versus increased systemic vascular resistance, SVR. That, in a nutshell, is tailoring medication based on the patient's hypertensive profile. That's why I said at the beginning, this is not being braggy at all, but this new publication that we're about to get into, about to summarize and highlight here from the Pink Journal, absolutely validates that model, not just for urgent and acute hypertensive treatments, but the exact same thing should be applied when patients require antihypertensive therapy antepartum, either for gestational hypertension or preeclampsia. We've covered that many times, and most of the data has used that algorithm, used that model, hyperdynamic or non-hyperdynamic slash increase SVR, as it applies to patients with urgent hypertension, okay? And it's totally legit for that. That's absolutely very well validated. We did a recent episode on that very thing on another publication. However, this new study that we're covering from the Pink Journal that was accepted on April the 1st is now saying, hey, this absolutely works and we can prove it antepartum. Okay, so rather than just everybody getting labetalol for hypertensive control for gestational hypertension or preeclampsia to prevent blood pressure escalation, which is what we're supposed to be doing based on the CHIP and CHAP trials, which we have covered as well on this channel, rather than just giving everybody labetalol, because that's what you use in pregnancy, right? Tailoring it to that same blood pressure model. So either if they're hyperdynamic, give them labetalol. If they're non-hyperdynamic, giving them Procardia. We now have new data that antepartum that works. And it's not just based on, oh, this rule of 55, you know, is that really a thing? Because they proved it with cardiac monitoring and echoes to look at cardiac output and to actually get waveforms and then to look at which medication was given based on the model and to see who escalated and who didn't. I'm going to explain it in this episode. So very quickly, in a quick nutshell, we're going to focus again on the hyperdynamic or non-hyperdynamic blood pressure model for hypertensive disorders in pregnancy, not focusing on acute hypertension like we've done before, now focusing antepartum. And this study is called the PYTT study. It stands for Preeclampsia and Hypertension Target Treatment. The acronym for this study is PYTT.
You know, you make me feel so good inside. I've always wanted a girl just like you. Such a PYT. Pretty young thing. Ooh.
Oh my goodness, y'all remember that old song from Michael Jackson, PYT? Yeah, well, we're not talking about that PYT. We're going to talk about PYTT, which is a study, but man, that was a good song. All right, podcast family, let's get in today's episode from this article that came out from the Pink Journal just on April the 1st, 2024. Here we go. Just trying to keep everyone up to date on evidence-based practice because medicine moves real fast. This is Clinical Pearls.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh my goodness. You know, one of the things about doing a podcast is I'm almost like super saturated by stuff that I want to talk about. I mean, it's just, I've got this list, and that's why I think I've pretty much given up on my scheduled agenda of items to discuss. You've heard me say before, I've got a calendar of, you know, we set out like 6 months in advance. Hey, let's cover general topics like this, knowing, of course, I'm going to bump it if something else comes out in print that I want to discuss. I haven't stuck to that calendar in like 3 months. I mean, it's just, and then I'll come back to it, I'll add something, I'll change it, which drives my editor and my publisher of this just nuts, right? But nonetheless, here we are. Like this study, I wasn't supposed to talk about this. I thought it'd be cool to, originally I was going to talk about, is chorioamnionitis a contraindication to amnio infusion? Huh? It's pretty good, right? You're like, wait, what? Why would that? What's going on with that? Well, if you have a patient who has chorio, she's on antibiotics, and then starts developing variable D cells, is chorioamnionitis, suspected IAI, contraindication to amnio infusion? You're like, clearly there's a guideline for that. No, there isn't. No. You got to dig through the data. And there is an answer, but you got to dig through the data for that. It's not in the ACOG guidance, okay? ACOG says, hey, do amnio infusion for variable D cells to try to delay a C-section. We know that's valuable. That helps resuscitate the child. And then the meconium issue, that's a whole other controversy. Historically, ACOG was yes, and then it went to no. Now it's like, I don't know. Meta-analysis says it may help. That's controversial, and we've covered that in a separate episode as well. Anyway, I may do that after this. Send me a message. Let me know if you think that that's valuable. There's actually some pretty wild stuff that's been published regarding chorio and amnio infusion. Now remember, just to be clear here, I'm not talking about amnio infusion for chorio. I'm saying amnio infusion for variables in a patient who has known IAI or suspected IAI / chorio. Okay, so let me know what you think. I already got my data on that. I found it interesting. I don't know. Let me know. All to say, I found this PYTT publication, and I got this alert on April the 2nd, and I've been meaning to get it out, but man, the eclipse is coming. I did that thing. There's always something to do. That's the whole purpose of my little tirade here is, man, there's just so many things floating around that I want to talk about that I'm trying to do as I can. And I'm telling you guys, I'm serious. I think as I'm getting a little older, my ADD is getting out of hand. And so I've got all these thoughts in here, what to do, and I've got patient care, yada, yada. I'm working with the college on something else. So I get a little outside of myself, let's just say. Anyway, back to what we're talking about here, the hyperdynamic model of hypertension in pregnancy, all right? If you want to, if you're like, wow, when did we talk about that in previous episodes? Well, I'm going to give you the dates right here, okay? Because the first time that we brought it up was July the 30th, 2023. That's where we kind of introduced the concept, even though it's been around for a while. But that was out of a new publication that was out at that time about the hyperdynamic model of hypertensive disorders in pregnancy and how that should tailor medical management. Again, most of the data is focused on acute management, but it still applies, of course, using that delta, the rule of 55, antepartum, okay? The second time that we did this was just in the fall, November 30th, 2023, when we, again, touched on a new publication at that time showing that this thing is valid. And remember, as I said in the intro, I feel totally validated because we've been on top of this for since kind of its inception, as you will, since it became hot in press. And again, validated because this new publication from April the 1st says, hey, this thing called the hyperdynamic model of hypertensive disorders in pregnancy is real. And it applies to gestational hypertension and preeclampsia antepartum. So I want to lay out this study here very briefly. The short of it is, if we tailor medications based on what the patient is telling us through her blood pressure, we're going to need to escalate doses less. That's it. That's the whole gist of this study. This study from the Pink Journal, whose little letters are called PYTT, which stands for the Preeclampsia and Hypertension Target Treatment, was out of Italy. Okay, the official title of this publication is The Preeclampsia and Hypertensive Target Treatment Study, a multi-center prospective study to evaluate the effectiveness of antihypertensive therapy based on maternal hemodynamic findings. That's all of the title. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, that's a lot of words, but it's so descriptive. Again, all of these were at different sites across Italy, and I'm going to show you how this was done here in a minute. But the take-home message is, look at the blood pressure rather than just memorizing. Guys, the worst thing you can do for oral boards when you come to take your oral boards in Dallas is to say, oh, I give everybody labetalol. Really? Everybody? What if they've got some weird contraindication? Oh, I give everybody nifedipine. What if they have some weird contraindication? You've got to understand that, one, there's different options, of course. Second, if you say, well, I'm going to tailor her blood pressure control based on what she's telling me by her pressures. That's called the hyperdynamic model. So if she's hyperdynamic, I'm going to give something that's going to attack that, like a cardiac output. So I'd focus on labetalol, barring, of course, she has some weird medication allergy to it. And if she's not hyperdynamic, I'm going to focus on the increased systemic vascular resistance. And I'm going to give something that's going to perfectly vasodilate, like Procardia, or nifedipine, and methyldopa. Wow. I mean, that's deep. And it's so accurate, and that's exactly what the data shows. So rather than, oh, urgent hypertension, everybody gets labetalol. Everybody gets labetalol first. Why? Now, if that's all your hospital has, then fine. But which would be kind of weird in and of itself. But rather than I give everybody this because that's what I do, the better answer is I give the patient what she needs. Okay? So that's called the hyperdynamic model of hypertension. Well, now that we've settled that, let's get into how the study was done. As the authors state, the objective was to compare blood pressure control in antepartum women receiving appropriate or inappropriate antihypertensive therapy in accordance with the baseline hemodynamic findings. Now, that's not mincing words, okay? Because they said appropriate or inappropriate antihypertensive therapy. I would have chosen ideal or not ideal, because there really isn't an inappropriate med. I mean, something's going to work. It's just that if you choose the one that's not in the right category based on what she's doing by her cardiovascular status, you're going to need to escalate. But boy, nothing like not mincing any words there, huh? Women who received an appropriate or inappropriate antihypertensive therapy. That's what the author stated. Again, I would have chosen ideal or not ideal, but it is what it is. And now, they did not use the rule of 55 here. It was much more objective. Now, you're like, well, the rule of 55 is pretty objective. That's systolic minus diastolic. And to subtract the two, if it's 55 or less, it's not hyperdynamic. If it's greater than 55, it's hyperdynamic. Yes, that's true, but this is much more convincing of that because they used a true cardiac output monitoring, okay? So they measured cardiac output, heart rate, systemic vascular resistance, stroke volume by objective means. So it wasn't just what the blood pressure is doing. They did that and confirmed it by actually measuring the independent variables. Wow. All right. So then they put the patients into two categories based on the ultrasound cardiac output monitoring and said you're either hyperdynamic or you are not hyperdynamic. And then the medications chosen were exactly as we've just discussed. If they were hyperdynamic, labetalol or a beta blocker would be considered ideal. And if they were not hyperdynamic, then they would need a peripheral vasodilator. So nifedipine or a methyldopa would be considered ideal. Does that make sense? All right. So it's very clear. We're going to figure out which patients, if they were hyperdynamic, were treated by the quote unquote appropriate medication and which weren't, and who had better control. So this is a way to validate if the hyperdynamic model and its employment to choose a medication is legit or not. Okay, so it's a great study, and it's very complicated because rather than just looking at blood pressure, they used the hemodynamic actual profile as measured cardiac output to make sure the patient was in the right camp objectively. The patients that were recruited for this study were all singletons between 22 and 38 weeks who had a diagnosis of new onset hypertension, either gestational hypertension or preeclampsia, and they could not have any severe characteristics, all right? So this was not preeclampsia, it was severe features. They were considered that's a whole other catch. We're trying to do medical management. to prevent blood pressure escalations, like Chip and Chap told us, all right? So it was gestational hypertension or preeclampsia between 22 and 38 weeks. So these patients were admitted for initial observation, and if they consented to be part of the study, they underwent cardiac ultrasound and monitoring to make them fall into a category of either hyperdynamic or not. And then they didn't tell anybody, right? So that was the investigators figured out, oh, she's hyperdynamic or not. And the treating physicians, the treating healthcare team were blinded to those studies, all right? Then they said, okay, we're done with our part. You all give whatever you're going to do, and then we'll see what happens. So that's how they were followed prospectively, all right? So they were identified at first and then left to treatment based on the provider discretion, okay? Now, it's interesting because they were blinded, of course, to the ultrasound, the true hemodynamic monitoring results, but they could see the blood pressure. So that's one of the issues here. Were they really blinded or not? Or if they weren't, if they still realized that the rule of 55 was in effect, did they know how to apply that rule? So that's something that's, you can't completely blind them because they need to see the blood pressure, but they were blinded to the objective determination of hyperdynamic or not based on the cardiac ultrasound readings. All right, y'all, just listen to how complicated this evaluation was. I mean, it's really good, but super detailed. I think it'd be easier to just look at the blood pressure and go, what's the rule of 55? But they had to prove it, all right? That's why nobody could say, oh, was it really 55? Did they cheat? Because they have true objective measurement by looking at hemodynamic measurements, okay? So when the patients were admitted to the hospital, hey, you've got gestational hypertension or new diagnosis of preeclampsia, no severe features going on. And now we're going to give you a medication protocol to tailor, to target that blood pressure to a goal of 130 to 140 or 80s over 90s, right? That was the target that they were trying to get at. Now, before the medications were chosen, which was left up to the provider discretion, remember, and it was either Procardia or methyldopa or labetalol. Those were their options, okay? Now, both of those, the first two, nifedipine or methyldopa, targets systemic vascular resistance. So that would be ideal in the non-hyperdynamic case. And then labetalol hits cardiac output, the contractility part of that. So it would be more appropriate in the hyperdynamic category, all right? So let me read you now this methods section so you get an idea of what's going on. It states, upon hospital admission, all women who met the inclusion criteria were enrolled in the study by means of a signed consent form. Great. Prior to any medical treatment being given, patients underwent a central hemodynamic assessment by an ultrasound cardiac output monitor. Now, we're not going to get into all of this. Short of it is it was a non-invasive way by a device to measure by waveform cardiac output, including systemic vascular resistance and stroke volume, so that patients will be placed either in the hyperdynamic or non-hyperdynamic category. And if for whatever reason that was not available, then they used an indirect assessment to put them into categories, which included something like the rule of 55, right? It was blood pressure values along with anthropometric measurements and a specific algorithm that was used. Basically, a very complicated rule of 55, right? So either ultrasound detection to actually measure the cardiac output and systemic vascular resistance and the dynamic state of the heart, or an indirect method, which is basically the rule of 55, kicked up a notch. The authors go on to say, quote, the clinicians who were in charge of the patient and who prescribed the antihypertensive therapies were blinded to the hemodynamic evaluation, and based on their local protocols and based on his or her own experience, used the first-line oral antihypertensive therapy as either a vasodilatory drug like nifedipine or methyldopa, or a non-selective beta blocker, which is labetalol. Fine. So, okay, we've already done your ultrasound, or you had the indirect assessment. Now, give her a med that you would like. Now, even though they were blinded to that formal evaluation of systemic vascular resistance and dynamic status of the heart, I mean, if they really thought about it, you could just figure out what's their blood pressure doing. But nonetheless, you can't completely bind them to everything because you need to see if they respond to their blood pressure or not. The primary outcome of this study, remember, this is not urgent hypertension, okay? So it's totally different. This is to keep blood pressure down to a target goal. So as they describe it, the primary outcome of the study was to compare the occurrence of severe hypertension between the women who were found to be treated with the hemodynamically appropriate or the hemodynamically inappropriate therapy based on what category they were in. Well, guys, I mean, let's just make it easy. What do you think? Those that had the medication tailored to their cardiovascular profile the best had decreased escalation of blood pressure. I mean, that's the whole thing that we've talked about tailoring the medication to the rule of 55. As the authors state in their results, a total of 152 women with hypertensive disorders of pregnancy were included in the final analysis. Of these, the majority displayed a hypodynamic profile. So let's stop there for a minute. Isn't that interesting? 75% of those who were diagnosed with hypertensive disorder were not hyperdynamic. In other words, probably responded better or would respond better, you would think, to something that attacks, increase systemic vascular resistance, like Procardia or Methyldopa. So in this prospective study, of the patients recruited, 75% were hypodynamic. Now, that varies by population, and it just happened to be that in this case. That's why looking at the blood pressures are important. But if your routine is just to give everybody labetalol, that may not have functioned that well in this group, because labetalol attacks the problem better when it is hyperdynamic. Okay, so once again, in this study, 75% were hypodynamic. In other words, 75% had more of a problem with increased peripheral vascular resistance. Okay, now the good news is that the majority, 76%, received the appropriate hemodynamic medication. So 75% were hypodynamic, and of those, 76% received the correct medication. In other words, nifedipine or methyldopa. Because it makes sense, right? I think the word's getting around, well, she's hypodynamic, why would I give labetalol? That's for hyperdynamic. Is this making sense, guys? So it's not just for the urgent hypertensive emergencies, but also for antepartum. And if your question is, well, wait, why are we treating again for gestational hypertension? Should we be giving medications? Well, yeah, I mean, the CHIP and CHAP trial, which we've covered again, as I mentioned already several times on this episode, show that if you target blood pressure, we should really be targeting to around 140s over 90s. Now, here in this study, they were really tight. Notice they tried to keep that goal. The target was 130 to 140, 80s over 90s. That's pretty darn low. Now, it's safe, but I don't feel comfortable with that. I kind of like to target, you know, 140s to the low 90s, and then definitely at 150s over high 90s, you should treat. It's not going to prevent end organ damage, all right? But it does prevent escalation of blood pressure to get into severe range and severe hypertensive emergencies. That is the CHIP and the CHAP, two separate trials, which we have talked about ad nauseum on this study, okay, on this channel, all right? So that's why these patients were receiving antihypertensive medications, antepartum, because that's what CHIP and CHAP said to do to prevent blood pressure escalation. And no, it does not adversely affect the child. Okay. Now back to the results. They go on to say, quote, the occurrence of severe hypertension prior to delivery was significantly lower in the group that received the appropriate therapy based on their hemodynamic profile. So, duh, I mean, if we give the right medication, then we're going to prevent them from escalating their blood pressure inappropriately. So, guys, this is, again, the message is nothing new. What's new is that this shows validation of the rule of 55 in the antepartum period as well. It's not just for urgent hypertension. And again, this was the PYTT study that we've basically wrapped up very quickly as a quick synopsis, because we've already talked about this several times before. Just remember that rather than, oh, everybody should just get labetalol either for urgent hypertension or antepartum, tailor it to what the patient is doing and telling you based on her blood pressure readings, based on the rule of 55. I love what they state in their discussion because it just wraps it up so nicely, guys, as we get ready to wrap up this episode. But here's the take home, very succinctly stated. Quote, our data seem to support the results from recent studies demonstrating that among women with hypertensive disorders of pregnancy, a tailored pharmacological intervention directed not only to lower the blood pressure values, but also to correct the underlying hemodynamic imbalance yields tighter control of blood pressure and reduces the risk of severe maternal complications, end quote. Duh. I mean, that's what we've been trying to say. That's what Mike Foley's been trying to say. Dr. Foley's been preaching for several years now that the hemodynamic principle of what the blood pressure readings are is directly implicated into which medication we should choose. So it's not just about giving a medication because that's what you memorize to do. Tailor it to what the patient needs. All right, everybody, as we get ready to wrap this up, remember this is brand new out of the Pink Journal. The title is The Preeclampsia and Hypertension Target Treatment Study, PYTT, a multi-center prospective study to evaluate the effectiveness of the antihypertensive therapy based on maternal hemodynamic findings. All right, podcast family, I hope you found this interesting and helpful. The Rule of 55 is legit, and it's not just for urgent management, but also for antepartum care as well. All right, let's take it home. All right, podcast family, that brings us to a wrap. As always, we're thankful for you, and we're glad you're part of our podcast community. We'll see you on another episode of Clinical Pearls.